You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 3rd of May. Tomorrow is our fourth birthday of the show. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Elections just less than 4 weeks away, local ones, of course. How's he positioning his local portfolio? And then Sasol CFO quits. Yeah, there's no good news for that stock. Alex Monk from Schroders, energy security and implications for the energy sector. And thoughts for me, RSA retail bonds as the savings rate for May are almost all-time highs. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb. JSE and Saudi Exchange look to create dual listing opportunities. Could open new markets and broaden trading universe for local and Saudi investors. I don't know. We've tried this before and it has not worked. Last time was Russia and Brazil. Business day. Home loans of 100 billion rand on verge of distress and high interest rate crunch. Standard Bank becomes second lender after Capitec to flag a rise in customers going into debt review. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.9%, NASDAQ 1.3% higher. Over in the east, it is green, Sydney up a quarter of a percent, Tokyo closed again for Constitutional Memorial Day, Hong Kong up 0.9% and Tencent up 0.8%. Commodities, red, gold, $2,309, Brent, $83.87, platinum, $966, and palladium, $940 an ounce, rand, $18.55, Bitcoin, 59,800, and top 40 looking for a green open, about 330 points or 0.5% to the upside.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony and I with Gary Boyson, he of course from Rand Swiss. Gary, appreciate the early morning. As I mentioned in the intro there, elections a couple of weeks off, and we're not going to delve into the permutations of who's going to get what and all of that. I'm just interested how you are thinking around local portfolios ahead of the election, or is this something you've frankly been thinking about for a lot longer and there's been no real change in the last couple of weeks or months?
Yeah, I don't think we're specifically positioning the portfolio for the elections. The nature of our local portfolio isn't really that dynamic, I suppose. We're not buying and selling. We're trying to kind of capture, I suppose, three themes in our local portfolio. And one is actually the access that we have to, you know, incredible multinational companies on the local exchange without having to use, you know, your foreign exchange allowances. Mm-hmm. So if I look at our portfolio, our biggest positions are the likes of Richmond, NASPAS. We've got a fairly big position in British American Tobacco as well. So the typical rand hedges form almost one leg of a three-legged stool to the portfolio. The second leg, you know, is very much, you know, very specific kind of bottom-up stock picking, you know, that we kind of have analysts that go and speak to, you know, all the smaller companies. And there we've got, you know, very specific is on things like Curo and Stadio as well. So like the education space in South Africa. And the elections doesn't necessarily impact what our view is the demand for education in South Africa is going to be. It doesn't matter if, you know, the official opposition is weak or, you know, the ANC polling is looking bad. That's not going to affect our fundamental base case for Stadio or Curo doing well. And then I suppose the third leg is really looking at, I suppose, the more interesting, kind of mid caps that are just moving into the large cap space. And there we've got at the moment a more consumer discretionary, consumer staple, so consumer-facing focus at the moment. And I think it's the thesis that, you know, over the next 3 years, we're going to see interest rates falling. We haven't yet gone aggressively into property, but, you know, our property stocks are essentially Growthpoint, which is the big listed stock in the biggest of the property REITs, and then our speciality REIT in storage. But, you know, we like ShopRite. We like Mr. Price, just with the idea that we are nearing the top of the interest rate cycle, even though it has been very delayed. I mean, we came in thinking the Fed was going to cut rates five times and we're down to, I think, maybe one. But, over the next 3 to 5 years, we expect that to come down. And I expect that to provide some sort of tailwind to our local retailers, and it has played out to an extent. Even with the expectations around interest rates shifting, we've seen a very robust performance from I'm talking about share price performance from something like Mr. Price. I mean, it's looking very, very good at the moment, despite all the naysayers.
Yeah, and you make my heart happy because a bunch of the stocks you mentioned are in my portfolio, which makes me feel a whole lot smarter. The key point, perhaps, is that as much as media, and I throw myself in that bucket, and voters and everyone else, we get all excited about elections, or maybe we get worried, or maybe we get scared, whatever the case is. Truthfully, long-term investing, kind of like elections, come and go, and you almost, I don't know, you invest through them in a sense if you've got a proper strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, to try and reposition yourself around elections, do you think that these elections are going to make that big a difference to the, as opposed to the underlying business profits in South Africa? I mean, we have major structural issues in South Africa, and changes in, yes, they're risks, but I mean, I suppose that's what you're looking for in a local portfolio. I look at what we've been doing over the last couple of weeks, and we kind of have to, as we move into elections, we expect higher volatility. We've already sent notes to our clients saying rhetoric is going to increase. You're going to hear a lot of scary things, but you need to look through that. But at the same time, you've got to respond to how the market is behaving in that environment. And what we have now is this weird situation where we actually have the overseas markets a little bit lower, but we've also got the local currency a lot stronger. I mean, when I say stronger, we're at 1850 compared to 1920. So if you go and look at something, and we will, we run a small ETF strategy to put inside TFSA portfolios for our clients. Obviously, within the tax-free savings account shell, you can't go and buy direct stocks. So we kind of got our five preferred, and they're very much the international players. But if you go look at something like the Signia S&P 500, that has pulled back nicely now because it's obviously Rand priced. The Rand is stronger and U.S. markets are lower. So it looks like a great opportunity to go buy some of these offshore ETFs on the local exchange. So all of that, that's, I suppose, how we're reacting. But that we're just reacting to the price movements as they happen and as opportunities present themselves.
Gotcha. So the exchange track, Sasol, which is almost everyone I speak to says it's worth a whole lot more, except the market, which says it's worth a whole lot less, keeps on selling it off. The CFO quit. Was he pushed? Did he jump? Maybe it's family. They said absolutely nothing. A little over 2 years in the job. Your take on Sasol, where do you sit on this camp?
I sit with a small position in Sasol at the moment. So we sit with about just over 2.5% position in Sasol. And I think at these levels, it is starting to become attractive, but you've also got to understand it is a bit of a mess at the moment. So, one, you've got the longer term, ESG headwinds against it as well. I mean, they did recently win a court case that sent the stock up about 10%, because they could pollute a little bit more. But you've got to remember that that Secunda operation is the world's largest single endpoint polluter. It's going to face kind of ESG headwinds. But at the same time, as you say, I mean, the chair stepped down. They've got a new CEO. CFO is now resigned. We don't know who the replacement is. From a management perspective, we're concerned. There's no question about that. And at the same time, they are facing a difficult macro environment just on the global stage. So if you look at their 9-month production update, looking at it, chemicals prices were down 20% over that period. Oil and gas prices have been down in spite of the conflict that we've seen in the Middle East. So it is a difficult macro environment for them as well. But there's also a difficult domestic environment. I mean, I've just pulled out one line from that production update, just saying this is from their outlook. We anticipate ongoing disruptions at our suppliers and customers due to challenges at Eskom and Transnet. And we continue to engage with the South African government to address the associated energy and supply constraints. It is a difficult, on top of lower chemicals and energy prices globally, it is a difficult operating environment for them locally as well. And you really need top-notch management to guide them through this. And as I said, a lot of uncertainty. So you can understand why the stock price is down. But at the same time, we keep getting asked the question, how low can this go? And I suppose the answer is it's an equity. It can go to naught. It probably won't get worse than naught.
we saw negative oil once. Say never say never. We'll leave it there.
Exactly.
It's Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss. Appreciate the early morning. And our question today is around positioning your portfolio ahead of the election. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Alex Monk, Portfolio Manager, Global Resource Energies at Schroders. Alex, appreciate the time today. The last 4 years have really been tough for the globalization trend, which is decades in the making. We've seen a pandemic. We've seen war in Europe and the Middle East. And this really has, in many ways, put energy security at the heart of the story and at almost a deglobalization in some senses.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we think about our energy system more broadly, there are two problems that we need to solve over the course of the next 30 years, one of which is decarbonization, as we know, but the second of which is energy security and trying to make sure that we can grow our energy sort of supply as energy demand continues to grow due to various factors, AI, of course, being one of them, sort of the topic of the day.
Yeah.
And what we know about our existing energy mix is that, you know, energy resources generally have been quite geographically spread into certain parts of the world. And I think what you're seeing with some of the deglobalization that's going on with some of the conflict is that different parts of the world are now having to reconsider where they're getting their energy from and thinking about their energy reliability. And that's creating opportunities for companies across the entire energy spectrum, both on the conventional energy side and the sustainable energy side too.
You mentioned geographic. I mean, that is part of the trick. I mean, oil and gas, and let's even throw coal into that, but certainly oil and gas, plenty of it, but not always in the right ideal places for use. And that might not even be wars. It might just be good old-fashioned logistics.
I think that's also what you saw to some extent in the post-pandemic period, where obviously we saw significant sort of supply chain disruption. And that largely, I think, triggered a lot of the sort of inflation that we saw in energy prices. I mean, obviously what we saw in Europe is a good example of this. Obviously, post the conflict in Ukraine, energy prices spiked higher, but actually energy prices were moving higher, you know, significantly before that. And again, part of that disruption from a supply chain perspective post-pandemic. So as the world becomes less globalized or perhaps less globalized than it has been before, again, thinking about where you're getting your energy from and the security of that supply is definitely becoming more important.
And you mentioned decarbonization. My sense is that this remains important, but it's not a case of just switching off those taps. It's going to be a transition. There is probably a future which has got no hydrocarbons doing our energy, but that future is, I was going to say decades, it's possibly a century or more away.
Yeah, I think what we probably saw again post-pandemic was that everybody set ambitions around decarbonization that were perhaps overly optimistic when thinking about the time it takes to rejig essentially our entire global energy system. You know, this isn't something that was going to take place over, you know, 5 or 10 years. It was going to take 20, 30, 40, 50 years to do. I think what gives us certainly a degree of confidence that that decarbonization will take place over time is that A, it needs to. We're obviously seeing, you know, climate problems, you know, continuing to escalate, more and more extreme weather events. You know, the recent events in Dubai, I think, are sort of very good evidence of that. But also what's fantastic about with some of these low carbon technologies is that actually they help solve energy security as well. You know, by and large, you can put solar panels or wind turbines in any part of the world. You're not reliant necessarily on that raw resource. We've obviously seen it even in South Africa, I think, where we've obviously seen a significant growth in things like rooftop solar as a form of generating energy security and boosting reliance of supply that's taking pressure off other parts of the energy system that remain a little bit constrained. So again, decarbonization through low carbon technologies is important in terms of solving that climate problem, but it can also be a real boost for energy security too, particularly in parts of the world where that natural resource isn't as abundant.
And it is. I mean, you mentioned there the sort of the new tech coming through, and some of it, you know, solar's not new, but of course, with the increased demand over the last years and decades, we've seen much improved scales of economy, much improved efficiencies and the like. There's still probably a lot of tech out there which we're kind of only scratching the surface. To your point, is that this is not a 5 or 10 year timeline necessarily.
Yeah, and that's certainly what is so exciting in some ways about this energy transition. We have a lot of the technology available to us today to solve, again, those two core problems of energy security and decarbonization. But we're also only at the start. You know, if you think about solar, we're continuing to see efficiency gains, we're continuing to see cost out. And again, that's going to make that technology more reliable and, again, a better technology from a cost perspective going forward. Exactly the same in things like batteries. Again, battery technology, when we think about stationary storage, you know, really, we've only scratched the surface in terms of, you know, really ramping this stuff at scale, you know, really over the course of the last couple of years. So there's enormous innovation still to come in the sort of sustainable energy pool, and that's going to be massively helpful. And exactly the same on the sort of conventional energy side. You know, when we think about things like carbon capture and the reduced cost of that, again, potentially allowing us to, you know, extend the lifetime of things like combined cycle gas turbines, again, that's going to be really, really important. We're seeing huge innovation in nuclear. Again, that's a potentially really interesting technology. So there's a lot going on within our energy system. And again, from an investment perspective, that's super exciting because it creates opportunities for returns for investors.
Does regulation play a part? I mean, it's one thing for a government to get a sense of we need to become less dependent on external suppliers of energy. We need to sort of be able to source, transport, store locally. Is regulation playing a part? I mean, certainly in South Africa, we've had some. There's been in the US, I think Europe and China as well.
Yeah, so when we think about what changes our energy system over time, and you can see this historically when you think about the growth of automobiles and oil or the Industrial Revolution, and you can think about it going forward as well, we've always spoken about three key drivers, which is cost. Ultimately, again, the lowest cost, most reliable technologies will ultimately start to gain share and others will obviously lose share. Consumer demand, and again, you know, thinking about sort of consumer reliability of supply is obviously going to be part of that as well, but also consumer decarbonization goals. And then policy is definitely the third pillar. And that's something that, again, you know, is going to be really important to think about. And we have obviously, I think, seen, you know, policy shifting over the course of the last couple of years, and it will continue to shift as we go forward. But it does remain an important driver of how our energy mix will evolve on a go forward basis.
In terms of investing, I mean, a lot of folks will say, well, I don't want to invest into coal. It's dirty. It's old. We had the IMF coming out earlier in the week. I think it was IMF or World Bank saying Australian South African coal prices still under pressure. But it's not as simple as just going and buying someone who's involved in creating your solar panels, because this is going to touch so many different parts of the investment world. Some industries who are not directly involved in the procurement will benefit from cheaper or cleaner or closer power.
I think, again, this is what excites us most as investors across the entire energy landscape at the moment, in that there are so many different parts of the energy value chain that can win as we transform our energy system and as we ultimately try and meet, you know, future energy demand. As you say, sometimes it might be the equipment manufacturers, whether that's producing gas turbines or wind turbines or solar modules. Sometimes it might be the companies building these assets and selling those electrons back to the grid. Again, when equipment prices fall, that can sometimes be unhelpful for equipment providers, but can be a massive boost in terms of the returns of those companies using that equipment. And equally, it might be as simple as some of the kind of raw materials producers. You know, if you think about a world where we're using a lot more electricity, which is ultimately the way the world is going to end up shifting as we, again, and try and decarbonize while meeting increased energy demand. Again, AI, a very good example of that. That's going to require a lot of cables. So things like copper are going to be very exciting. You know, in the battery space, there's obviously going to be lots of battery materials. So one of the things that I think is really important for investors when thinking about sort of energy is not just necessarily to look at energy in its sort of, you know, narrowest form, but to also think about that full supply chain of companies that can benefit as our energy system evolves over the next 20 and 30 years.
Yeah, I'd almost put that concept of energy as a key theme in the portfolio, because there will be tons coming. AI guys will find it better when we get cheaper and cleaner energy. We'll leave it there. Alec Monk, Portfolio Manager, Global Resource Energies at Schroders. Appreciate the time.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with StanLib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
So the RSA retail saving bond rates reset on Wednesday, 1st of May, almost at all-time highs. We've got 5-year fixed at 11.5, 3-year 10.25, and the 2-year at 9.75%. The inflation link didn't change. They only changed biannual, and they remain at records. But those fixed rates are just off the highs. We saw better rates, I think it was middle of last year, June of 2023. Trick is, really good rates, quite attractive, but remember the tax implications. communications. These are interest-bearing. They come into your income tax as income. There are, if you're under 65, 24,800, and if you're over 34,500, is exempt. But for a part of a portfolio, certainly something to look at. Might be higher for June, because, of course, these are linked to the underlying government bonds, plus a small premium. And, well, who knows what's going to happen in the lead to that election. That's it for today. We're trading with Petri Redenhuis yesterday from Herenia Capital Advisors, asking around the Nasdaq and S&P and whether he thinks the charts could see more selling, or are we in for a bounce. He thinks maybe a little more downside, but we asked you, are you bullish or bearish on US markets? Almost half said bearish, a third said bullish, the rest were saying don't really know either way. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb websites in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice, and we'll chat again Monday, compounding.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.